today's episode. You do not want to miss one of my all-time favorite guests and the most downloaded episode of all time of the podcast, James Gill, aka Fish. He is a transformational facilitator, heart coach, and yoga teacher. He creates transformative social and emotional learning experiences, which I can attest to. My husband and I recently took his heart-centered communication course, and it was transformational, both as individuals, as a couple, and as parents. He helps people grow empathy, connection, and understanding in the face of complexity, conflict, and difficulty. One of my favorite things that he says is that all conflict is an invitation to find deeper intimacy in your relationship. Let's dive in. Welcome to season 5 of the Wellness as a Way of Life podcast, the less is more source of wellness, knowledge, wisdom, and inspiration for female leaders and founders. Here, we teach you why not all wellness trends are for you, how to figure out which ones are, and how to best adapt them for your own personal wellness toolbox. Ultimately, we need to know how to integrate your wellness practices so fully that they become to feel like brushing your teeth, a foundational part of who you are and not a checkmark on your to-do list. I'm your host, Megan Swan, creator of the Wellness as a Way of Life community and the Sustainable Integrated Wellness Approach. I have more than a decade of experience in the wellness industry and on my own personal journey, learning how to tune into and trust my intuition and drown out all the noise. As a certified health coach, detoxification expert, plant-based chef, yoga teacher, and consultant, I will help you distill down the information overload and feel more confident and at ease in your own skin. Welcome back to Wellness as a Way of Life. I'm so honored to have James Fish Gill back. You are the most downloaded episode of all time of all of my 100 plus episodes by a long shot, which speaks volumes to your mastery and also just how needed what you do is, I think, for humans on an interpersonal level and on a planetary level. And I had the honor of taking your first level, I guess we'll call it, of doing some of this work. And I learned a lot, but also learned like a lot of self-development. You know, you don't just fix yourself in one course. It's more like deeper awareness of all the things that you can continue working on. So welcome back. First off, how are you?
Thank you. I feel really honored to be back, Megan. And I just wanted to pick up on your point that, you know, the fact that it's been downloaded a lot, that first chat we had, is also speaks volumes to how humans are hungry for something else. Like, I was writing a component of my book yesterday. It was actually the starting paragraph, in which I was just saying, you know, It gets tiring and lonely, the idea that some people are just assholes. It's a very juicy thing to hold. It's a very juicy worldview, right? Because it's charged full of rightness and wrongness and steeped in drama. But eventually, we need to reach for something that feels more true, because it's to be stuck in rightness and to be making everyone else wrong is a prison, and the heart calcifies and we grow tired and we feel lonely. You know, I work with people who are so certain that they're okay and that everyone else is in their family is a nut job. And, you know, that's a valid perspective. And yes, they've been through a lot of pain. But I say to them, how are you? Like, how is that for you? And usually they kind of break down. And I say, okay, well, let's see if we can shift to a worldview that starts to support connection between those people that you love and you. And so you can start to feel understood by people again and start to feel in communion. You know, that's what communication is. It's communing. And I think we've lost the art of communing in communication. And we're heading, you know, increasingly quickly towards a world where our communication is simply just slander and libel and blame and vilification. So I love the fact that people are reaching out for this. You know, it's not for the faint-hearted, as you know. It takes enormous courage to witness the way our mind and the minds of all beings generates opposition without us knowing. That's quite a confronting thing to realize. So it takes such courage. So yeah, and I love that we're back here talking about it again.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an essential aspect of overall well-being, you know, our ability to feel like we have some sense of emotional wellness in terms of our relationship with ourselves, but then to your point, increasingly difficult to have this feeling of connectivity with different relationships in our life, whether it be like our main partner, family, friends, community, boss, maybe. And I mean, you've just given me so much wisdom in terms of, well, I'll get into like sort of my takeaways, I think, of the work that I've done so far. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about this, you know, what is so juicy about being right or being of like having the drama?
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to keep inquiring into this question because every time I do, I find more. And, you know, you understand that my work is based on validation. I never invalidate anyone for their experience. In fact, until my dying breath, I will validate every single human being for the experience they're having right now and have at any time had. That doesn't mean to condone certain behaviors. In fact, I'm a fierce stand against certain behaviors, but I will always deeply validate the experience in every human being. So, you know, if we look at the validity behind wanting to slide in or just naturally sliding into blame and vilification and reaching for all the pop psychology labels that are out there now that make a non-human out of that person that consistently does that thing. Why is it so juicy? Well, if I'm in the status of being, there's nothing wrong with me, then I naturally will make the problem over there with you, right? Some uncertain thing has happened between us and it's led us to become increasingly hurt. I'm so sure the problem's not here with me, so it must be over there with you. That's 100% natural human conclusion in any human since the dawn of time, as soon as something upsetting happens. It's not me, it's you. There's another version of that.
Joking that it's juicy, right? But it's really, you know, it's a safety thing.
It's a safety thing.
It's almost like a simplification of something that's complicated.
Yeah. And if we look underneath there at the safety aspect, you're so spot on. What we are aiming to do, what the mind, this is all happening subconsciously. None of us choose it, by the way. What the mind is obsessed with doing in the heat of uncertainty is to not be cast out. Think about, for most of our evolutionary history as human beings, we have lived in communities where to be cast out of the community, to be made wrong, to be shamed, to be cast out, to be thrown to the wolves was literally that. Like to be cast out of the community for our beliefs, for our behavior, etc., equals being eaten by a predator because we're no longer in the safety of the community. So I actually think it's less about wanting to be right and it's more our desperation to not be wrong.
Like a biological fear.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, you know, like I get the privilege of working with couples all over the world. And without fail, when I say, hey, like, what's the scenario of conflict that we should dive into today? Without fail, they're kind of a bit shy. They're like, well, it happened over something that doesn't, like, we're a bit embarrassed about how it started. That's an indication of how, like, even if it's, why didn't you remember to bring home the olives like I asked you 3 times? Even if it starts off with that, what kicks in our nervous system is a very real threat response where we immediately fear being cast out of the heart of someone else. And that is terrifying to us, actually. It's terrifying to us. So we cast others out in a way to cast ourselves in, if that makes sense. We actually want to remain in the realm of love, and not be cast out of it. So we will naturally cast them out. You know, it's the same as if I witness someone drowning in the surf and I swim out to save them, what's their instinct? To push me under. Why? Because that's how they want to become more buoyant. That's what every drowning person will try to do, is push the rescuer under in order that they become more buoyant. That's not happening consciously. That's an unconscious survival mechanism. So we tend to push each other under in order to not be pushed under ourselves. And, you know, there's some things that we can't actually see. So in any moment of conflict, something happens. You walk in the door without the olives. And I've texted you 3 times today, and you've assured me that you bring olives home. And I've got the pasta dish almost ready, and our friends are due in 15 minutes, right? So here's the uncertain moment, like, where's the olives? And your face stops and goes, oh, I forgot them. And I'm like, ah. And then we're off, right? What I can't see in that moment, in my moment of disappointment and frustration, I can't see that I'm having a very real experience and you're having a very real experience. What I naturally just feel is the experience I'm having. And that naturally occurs to me as the whole truth. And over there in your world, you're having a very real experience. And you're so compelled by the reality that's alive in you that you can't even consider my experience. And we make this unconscious assumption that only one of us is right, which is absolutely hilariously ridiculous once you start to practice realizing that my experience and your experience are both real and alive. What to do about that is another thing, but starting with realizing that in every moment of conflict, I'm having an experience and you're having an experience. If we get into the game of who's right or wrong about their experience, we're screwed. Like from the outset, we're screwed because if one of us has to be dismissed for the other one to be validated, then we're actually cultivating resentment. And by the way, we do often, you know, I work with a lot of people in relationship who choose, it's like the partnership agrees who's right and who's wrong, right? And maybe they even take turns. And the person who has to be wrong sits there feeling like, oh, well, at least there's peace in the house. But peace has come at the cost of me having to forego my own reality. And over time, that's going to lead to resentment. So this work is founded on the premise that reality consists of my experience plus your experience. And so the greatest mistake we can ever make in conflict is not allowing both experiences to be recognized.
Yeah. Can we pause there for a moment
Yeah.
and point out that, you know, there's multiple systems, education things that really just continue on this instinct we have that
Yeah.
promote that only one side can be right, or at least slightly more right, or, you know,
Yeah.
win, whatever it is. So yeah. So, having the experience of going through that program with my partner, you know, it's been transformational, but there were a lot of brave individuals in this container, and I'm sure you work one-on-one with people who, you know, like maybe the person that they're trying to bring closer in isn't really on board with change or changing their approach. What are some ways that you can kind of maybe bridge that gap, or at least find some more, a different sense of ease, maybe in a situation where it just feels like there's only disconnection, or that you just are not going to go first?
I think if I had to rank the top questions I've received from all over the world in the last few years, maybe at number one would be, why is it always mine to repair? Why am I the one who always has to bring awareness or willingness? Why won't they? Very, very common experience. And it really speaks to our longing for mutuality, doesn't it? I mean, wouldn't it be incredible if every day you could count on your partner, your sibling, your parents, your children to come to you and be willing to repair the damage that happened yesterday? Wouldn't it be incredible? And that you could have like a whiteboard on the refrigerator with like a tally, and the tally was always even, and you're like, wow, this is great. But you know, even then, the tally would feel like it's skewed in the favor of you always having to do it, because this is the nature of our self-centered view of the world. We naturally recognize all the efforts we're making, and we naturally can't recognize all the efforts they're making. But what a valid question, because you know, if what I taught, Megan, if the tools that I taught were such that both people had to use them to resolve conflict, how incredibly unpowerful they would be. Because in the heat of actual conflict, you're not both willing. It's the very opposite of both being willing. You're both unwilling, actually. You're both like, screw you, I'm going to be in the other room, and when you get your shit together, when you can finally recognize that you've been an asshole, I'll be waiting for you in the other room. And you're really going to have to do a good job of like apologizing, because you're sleeping in the chook house tonight, buddy. You know, that's actually where we're both at, and we're both there. We're both like, no, as if it's my fault. You said and did these things. I'm not apologizing first. So it's very natural for us to find ourselves in this, what I call a Mexican standoff, but you're in Mexico, so I don't know whether that's even a thing, right? But it's like, you know, you imagine the posture, both people, folded arms, peering down their nose at each other, saying, I won't open to you until you open to me. And that's a really valid place to sit, like very natural. No one needs training in that, by the way. You don't have to do a coaching program to learn how to make it someone else's fault. But well-resourced enough, that becomes Israel-Palestine. You know, it's two sides saying, I can't open, I can't put my weapons down, because look at what you've done. And when you really look at that happening on both sides, you notice that naturally that's the process of escalating conflict. I will only when you will is the same as I won't because you won't. Same thing. And if I keep saying I won't because you won't, you're going to fight harder for me to recognize, no, you won't because I won't. And it just naturally gets louder and escalates from there, gets more violent. So, you know, I say to people that I work with, it takes enormous courage to be the one to create openness between you. And I say, what would it be like for you if you were always the one? Like, would that be a problem for you? And people say to me, yeah, but that's like, that's their needs always get met and my needs don't. But that's not this work. I don't teach you how to forego your needs to meet the needs of the others. I teach you how to speak your needs and acknowledge the needs of the others. So, you know, it's valid to stay in that closed-hearted place. My heart's closed because you're closed to me, so I've closed to your closing. And you're closing to my closing, to your closing, and et cetera, et cetera. Valid to stay there. But if we are done with how lonely and heartbroken and disconnected that leaves us and them, by the way, if we're sick of cutting friendships, if we're on our third divorce, if we are estranged from our children, if we're having terrible relationships with our parents, maybe we're tired enough of that old model of right and wrong to reach for something new. And so a couple of things we can start to do. On the most basic level, ask yourself this question. In the heat of the conflict, ask yourself this question. What experience am I having? And what experience are they having? And you'll notice as you ask yourself that question, the mind starts to want to dismiss one in favor of the other. But we've got two hands. You know, I use this at the moment for your listeners. I'm holding my left and right hands out in front of me. We've got these two hands that are a natural extension of the heart. In yoga, this whole section, the rib cage out through the shoulder girdle, upper arms, forearms, and fingertips is the same. It's how we give and receive love. It's how we touch. It's how we offer. It's how we're of service. If I hold my left hand out and my right hand out, and I recognize that my left hand can be my experience and my right hand can be their experience, and they coexist, even as they differ radically from one another, we are already in the practice of conscious communication. Normally, back in the old conflict model, I've already dismissed theirs in favor of mine or dismissed mine in favor of theirs. Naturally, the mind loves to choose my side or their side. Sides don't exist. It's two incongruent, concurrent experiences. So on the most basic level, being the one who says, what's my experience and what's their experience? And can I hold them both? Can I create enough space in a conversation for their experience to be real and for my experience to be real? Now, in order to be able to do that, we have to translate what's being said into what's being experienced. What I mean by that is, so if you forget the olives and I turn to you and I'd be like, oh my God, like I reminded you three times, what am I meant to do with dinner now? And our guests are going to be here soon. How on earth could you forget? There's my accusation. How on earth could you forget? And you, having just walked in from a busy day and feeling guilty about forgetting the olives, you immediately hop on the defensive and you're like, why is this such a big deal for you? Right? So my statement is, how could you forget? And your statement is, why is this such a big deal for you? Those two things, we can't hold those two things, because as soon as I said, why did you forget? You just want to defend yourself. And as soon as you say, why is it such a big deal for you? I just want to defend myself. So the whole thing goes shit shape from there. But let's translate. And maybe you could help me out here, Megan. What's the experience I'm having underneath my accusation? How on earth could you possibly forget? I messaged you three times. What's the experience I'm having underneath that?
Well, you're stressed, frustrated. Yeah. You know, you feel like you did your part of the, you know, social contract to get the olives. And yeah, you're afraid like how you're going to look not having the optimal dinner. You're feeling like just the frustration of you're communicating something and the other person is not receiving it in the same way.
Really
Intent.
frustrated. Fearful that our guests won't get the dinner that like that that you know that I'm going to be serving up something short of the mark. And also, can you hear how unsupported I feel? How could you forget the olives means? I feel so unsupported. I feel so frustrated, so disappointed, so anxious, and so unsupported. So what we've done there is we've just translated how it normally comes out of the mouth, which is from the mind to the mouth is like light speed. We've translated the analysis into experience. So now it's in a form that we can digest. I was standing in a juice stall the other day and I watched the guy drive the truck in and deliver whole oranges, right? And then at the same time, I was looking over to the juice stand where people were leaving with cups of orange juice. And it was like, wow, this is what we have to do. We can't, it's like you wouldn't be satisfied if you stood at a juice stall and got a cup with whole oranges in it when you walked away. You'd be like, why didn't you juice it? But oranges don't come in juice, they come in whole oranges. So how conflict communication comes out of their mouth is in whole oranges, and we've got to juice it to make it digestible. By the way, notice it comes out of our mouth as accusation and assessment and attack as well. It's like, what, you're hopeless, like I can never rely on you. That's how it comes out, right? So we have to do that translation in order to make it digestible. What I mean by digestible is in order for us to bring loving awareness to it, because conflict is only resolved when loving awareness is brought to experience. So there's the translation. Now, over there in your world, in our olive, the great olive fiasco, you say to me, why is it such a big deal for you? Which naturally, I just want to respond with, how dare, like, of course it's a big deal. Like, look at the afternoon I've had cooking and look at that, you know, how can you not see that this?
Three messages if it wasn't important.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Don't be so freaking defensive, you know. So instead, let's translate that. So if you're saying to me, why is this such a big deal to you? What are you really experiencing underneath those words? What's the experience that wants to be recognized? You're feeling what?
Well, I feel like there could be a million things that's going on the other person's side, but, you know, you feel like you're being accused. You're offensive. You probably don't quite understand because you've been in your own world for the whole day and not appreciating why one ingredient is so important. Probably underappreciated as well, because maybe you rushed home to get in time for dinner and a bunch
you've
of other
brought, you've brought our favorite wine. I didn't request that, but you've brought that to us. So you're feeling unappreciated. Exactly. You're feeling unappreciated about everything you've managed that day, everything that you've put into the relationship of the last few months, the thoughtfulness that you went and stopped and got the bottle of wine, the fact that you've contributed to making this evening, you invited our friends and it's been such a long time. So there's this natural thing of you feeling unappreciated and you feeling attacked and blamed, as if there's a problem and it's suddenly at your feet. And by the way, every human being, when accused or blamed, will naturally defend. If that would be number two in my list of questions I most commonly get, is people say, why is my partner so defensive? Once we understand that our accusation immediately evokes defensiveness, then we will never ask why are they defensive again. We instead just become more skillful instead of accusatory. So if we hold those two experiences, you're feeling unappreciated and attacked, and I'm feeling unsupported and stressed. Now we're grounded in reality. Both of those things are true, and both of those things want loving awareness wrapped around them. And so the quickest way to create a sense of mutuality, or otherwise known as emotional safety or mutual understanding, is by being the one who is willing to recognize your pain and my pain. Not continue on the route of the analysis, not continue to fire accusations and blame, simply say, look at how upset we both are. Look at how attacked and unappreciated you might be feeling. I recognize that in you. And look at how unsupported and anxious I'm feeling right now. And I see that in me. Can you feel the difference there?
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many good tools there. I mean, I think for me, the major takeaway is just trying to get off of this jumpiness we have around assuming like they wanted to disappoint, like all the things that you're accusing them of are true, and really trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes, which, you know, in the heat of the moment is not easy.
Not at all. Not at all.
I love how you have like certain phrases that can become sort of mantras. Like you pick one that resonates that can help you, because it really is in that moment, or at least, you know, at a moment that you're trying to come back together for connection, the wording, making it, you know, an invitation to connect versus an accusation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the work that I do, I provide certain phrases and we practice certain phrases, but ultimately I'm going to say that it's not even about what we say. It's about where we say it from. So in the conflict model, I'm naturally just obsessed with my own experience and I'm speaking my analysis. I'm just like, you're hopeless, you're unreliable, and I can't believe you've forgotten again. And what do I have to do? And why do you never support me in the crisis? That's my analysis. And you're stuck in your analysis. And what's really required of me is to say yes to our experiences. I'm having an experience, you're having an experience, and both of them need to be recognized and wrapped in loving awareness. And anything I say from that place is going to go magnificently. Anything I say from the place of I'm right and you're wrong is going to go terribly, even if we say it with silky kindness. People often message me saying, hey, I think I'm really skillful at communicating my pain to my partner, but he gets so defensive. And I say, can you screenshot your message to him? And they do. And then it's like something like, I'm so sick and tired of being let down by you, babe. Right. And they're like, and they're like, I'm just using I statements and I'm just directly communicating. Why isn't he, if he loved me, he would just receive that. Or they might get even more silky. They might just be like, I'm really feeling frustrated, my darling love, and I just need you to be more supportive, please, baby. And it's like, it's all wrapped up in lovey-dovey language, but it's still, you're the person. It's still you're the problem. It's just a silky fairy floss version of it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, listen, if I remove all the fairy floss from that and just say these two things, I'm going to hold my pain and what they were hoping for as distinct from my pain in equal measure. And it sounds like this. I feel incredibly unsupported and I know that you would never, ever want that for me, my love. There's no fairy floss there. It's just pointing to the fact that my pain and what my partner wants for me are different. That will immediately evoke an open-heartedness in them, because I'm saying you're not the villain and what you've done has hurt me. You're not an asshole and what you've done has left me feeling pain.
Yeah, I think for me, maybe the biggest takeaway was this shifting out of an automatic assumption. I'm not even sure it's a word, but I keep using it, of malintent, or even just assuming you know what their intentions are without having a conversation.
Yes, yes. And we spoke on our first call, we spoke to some depth on that, and we could, you know, we could go into great depth on it because I've been loving exploring that. But here's a couple of things. Like you're speaking to, Megan, we assume, we know their intention. That's when you really start to see how much we do that and how all beings do that. It's hilarious. This is how we start to see the ego. That's how we just start to get a glimmer of the ego in us. I'm sure I know your intentions better than you do. And you're over there arguing that you had no intention of upsetting me. And I'm over here going, that's an absolute, that's incorrect. And I'm correct about what you intended. So that's a hilarious thing, because from that place, I'm saying not only am I right about me, I'm also right about you. There's no space in that relationship in that moment for you to be recognized for your goodness. And all people move from valid intention, even behind the most hideous things they do. We're not condoning the things they do. We're recognizing it arises, behavior arises from somewhere. So that's the first way to see ego is, I'm sure your intention is not what you say it is. I know your intention better than you. The second way that we see ego is, I know that you shouldn't have the pain that you say you have. So
yeah,
in the
or like measuring pain, like whose pain is more valid or more,
yeah.
This is one thing that you do so beautifully, is this piece of making people feel validated and seen.
Yeah. I mean, that's all that's happening in the world. All that's happening, if we were to zoom into Israel, Palestine, all that's happening, and this might sound ridiculously simple, but on the deepest level, person A or community A has extraordinary pain, like years and years and years and years and years of absolute suffering. Community B also has years and years and years and years and years of absolute suffering. And so much of the conversation is around whose suffering is valid and whose is a little less valid. And for as long as, you know, we don't need to talk about that particular dynamic, but in a relationship, for as long as one person's pain gets recognized but the others doesn't, we're screwed. That will always amplify conflict. The truth is, we are both suffering. In any conflict moment, the truth is we are both suffering. The other truth of every moment is we were both hoping to feel certain valid things by what we did. We had intentions that were not to cause pain. So validation, my pain and your pain, is like an absolute superpower. What prevents us from that is we're so busy making love to our view. Of course we are, because the senses are wired in our, like my nose and my tongue and my skin, they end where I end. So I can't feel into you. If, as you came in through the door without olives, if I could have my nervous system tuned into yours, like plugged in directly, I would already feel what it's like to be you in that moment and what it's like to be me in that moment. But I don't have that. I don't have your sensory data. So it's one of the kind of cruel things about our individual body is that we can't feel into one another. However, the heart has a great capacity to. If I can stop and think, what's the experience you're having underneath your shitty behavior, underneath your irritation and the horrible words that you're saying and your retreat into the lounge room and you scrolling on your phone, you don't want to talk. What's the experience that's alive in you right now? I'm going to bring loving awareness to it. And what's the experience that's alive in me? I'm going to bring loving awareness to it. And let's see how we go, validating the heck out of my experience and your experience. Let's see how that takes us. And that will lead us towards a regulation of the nervous system for you and for me. Because pain starts to ease once loving awareness is brought to it. I was at the supermarket the other day, and I was coming through the checkout, and there was a girl in the checkout. She was really, like, her manner was really grumpy, right? She was didn't meet eye contact with me. I asked her a question. She didn't reply. She kind of pushed things into the bag to kind of, and you know, I noticed I wanted to just be like, what the fuck's your problem, right? Just like, you know, hello. Yeah, super judgy because I was just feeling suddenly so unimportant in her view, like suddenly so rejected, actually. And but I said to her, this job must be incredibly frustrating for you at times and arduous for you at times. And she just stopped and looked up. She said, it's been such a difficult day. And I said, I bet it has. And she said, thank you. I hope your day is nice. So notice there's a shift in her in that moment, simply because instead of telling her she shouldn't have her pain or she shouldn't be behaving that way, I was actually able to say, what it's like to be you right now must be really difficult. And suddenly the behavior stopped because her shitty behavior was just a wanting her upset to be seen.
Can you speak to a moment? Because why is it that we're so much better at doing that with absolute strangers than we are with our partner or our child?
Yeah, beautiful. Well, for me, because her grumpy behavior, her lack of eye contact and her silence in response to my question, I took that a bit personally. I didn't need to, but because I'm a human, I do, right? I took it a bit personally. I was like, why is she being that way to me, right? But because she's a stranger, it doesn't really matter. Like, I can walk away. But if that's someone that I've devoted my life to as a romantic partner, or if that's my daughter, if that's my ex-wife, people I care about and want a good relationship, then it lands extra personally. I'm like, you closing to me has a real impact on me, and screw you. Screw you for being unloving. Why are you being unloving? Like, how many times might you turn to your partner and say, why are you so grumpy with me? Right? Like, really, quite naturally. Why are you so, you know, why have you been short with me for the last 3 days? Why are you a bit distant? Why are you, right? And where that complaint really says, I'm hurting. But saying why have you been grumpy also says you shouldn't be. Can you hear that? Like, faintly in the background, it's like, you shouldn't be grumpy with me. I don't want you to be grumpy with me. Please don't be grumpy with me. Instead
we have this knowledge of how they should feel or are allowed to feel or behave or things, you know?
Yeah. We have a tendency as human beings to judge the behavior rather than seeing where the behavior is naturally arising from. So for someone to be grumpy with me, something's alive in them. What's alive in them is what needs loving awareness. For the grumpiness to stop, the experience must be tended to. Does that make sense? This is the absolute essence of this work. For the behavior to change, the experience that's being had needs to be wrapped in love. So what happened in that moment was I just got to see, you have every right to feel that way to this checkout woman. You have every right to be upset. I would be too. If I'd spent all day in the checkout in a supermarket dealing with people's complaints about this and that, I would be absolutely beside myself. I would be deep in frustration. You have every right to be. And immediately, she didn't meet me with spite. She went, it's been a really big day. So now she wants to talk about her pain. And now I can say, of course, like, you're a champion, actually, for dealing with that level of frustration. She goes, thank you for seeing me. All the behavior dissolves. And then she says, I hope you have a beautiful afternoon. So openness, she's open to me. Why? Because I opened to her. I'm not saying be like that with me every time. I'm not saying I was okay with your behavior. I'm saying I'm going to love where the behavior arose from. And you're right, in the midst of our very personal crisis, this is a really difficult thing. You know how much practice it takes. You witnessed everyone else on the group calls trying and failing, trying and winning, trying and failing. Like, we really are having to grow new neural pathways. When I'm met with someone's accusations, instead of defending the accusations, I'm going to reach into the experience underneath the accusation and I'm going to bring my loving awareness to it. When I want to accuse someone, instead of speaking my accusation, I'm going to reach into the experience I'm having underneath my accusation and I'm going to bring loving awareness to it. And when pain is met with love, it moves.
Yeah, when I was saying about phrases, I meant more like things that you tend to say a lot. So,
oh yeah, like of course. Yeah.
But like rap, like loving awareness, like for most people, there's like a softening just with the word awareness. And for me personally, it's always okay. I'm seeking connection.
Yeah.
Connection over being right, or
which
you
is
know,
a major step,
no,
by
there's
the
no
way.
winning in connection, you know.
Yeah.
And I've just found it so transformational. I mean, before we jumped on this it's been a day, and to your point, like everything, this is a powerful practice. There's times that it comes easier and others where you're just like, you know, not the optimal human communicator.
No.
And you just sort of default to the conflict mind, and of course all these things are easier if you're, you know, not tired and you've eaten properly. You've like, it's easier to practice them when you're in like a generally good space. And I think that's for us as a couple, where we had sort of more of the more transformational connecting conversations when we were actually going over something that happened like a long time ago, or like an ongoing pattern that didn't feel like really charged at that moment. Just, I guess the other thing for me that is saying the obvious thing out loud. Of course, there's always better ways to say it, but I just mean, I think when we, particularly in relationships where we've had like a certain dynamic for a really long time, we just assume everybody knows everything that we're thinking, or, you know, and instead being like, I notice that you did everything to get here at this hour, and I appreciate you for X, Y, Z, and like, you know, opening with that.
Yes.
And then, you know, and I'm really sad that there's no olives because I've been working really, you know, like there's just ways to bring people in and also express, you know, how you're feeling, and nobody needs to be right, but it's a practice.
Yeah. And that idea of no one needs to be right on the surface level can feel like fence sitting. Actually, it can feel like just not speaking our needs and not, you know, just not getting into it, actually. But you know, this work is fiercely speaking to both unmet needs. Me to say, I'm incredibly disappointed and let down and incredibly stressed that there are no olives for dinner. And look at how much effort you've gone to be here on time, the thoughtfulness of the wine that you bought. And I know that forgetting the olives was never in your plan. Like, fiercely speaking to their heart and fiercely speaking to ours. And the more fiercely we take both sides, the more the blame goes out of the room, and then we just have unmet needs. What should we do about my sense of unsupportedness and stress? And what should we do about your sense of unappreciated? How can we bring love to both of those things so that the relationship equals fulfillment? You and I having unmet needs bathed in love will feel more fulfilling. Yeah, but being the one to lead, Megan, that's the thing, you know. You have every right to sit there and go, I'm not going to do it this time. But notice demanding that they repair never goes well. Have you noticed? Never.
Well, and I think it's, again, not something I've done perfectly, believe me. But, you know, it's that much more complicated when you feel like you're being attacked and you,
yep.
on some conscious level, don't want to react. And yeah, trying to stay in a present sort of multifaceted, all right, everybody's coming with this. And I think we need to say something about the fact, like, conversations over text without tone.
Bad news.
So problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. The hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours I've spent trying to deliver nuanced compassion towards myself and towards another person via text, and it failing dismally, whereas face-to-face or on a phone call, because there's interconnectedness in conversation, we can deliver nuance so much better. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, I think I learned from you, like, there's this, or maybe some, you know, there's like all these human cues, you know, like you can sense when something was taken not how you intended it, more when not over text, obviously, and you can kind of like do some damage control or reword. So I've now kept you much longer than I promised, but this was all really so helpful. Is there anything else you want to leave us with in terms of helping the individual who's just doesn't want to go first, feel inspired or like more agency to do so?
Yeah. So the remedy, you know, if I'm in the midst of my conflict with you about the olives, and I just think it's like, it's clearly your problem because I texted you 3 times and you've walked in the door and you're not even willing to be responsible for it. And I've had enough and this has been going on for the longest time, right? So clearly I'm just like, I'm not going to leave this repair. It's not mine to repair. But over time, once the coldness sets in and the disconnection happens in the relationship because of that, when you're willing, step number one is validate your own experience. Not your analysis, not what you're projecting onto them, but look at how incredibly unsupported I'm feeling right now. Look at how angry I feel at their defensiveness. Look at how hurt and uncared for I'm feeling. Yes, those feelings alive in me make so much sense. I'm right here. Can you feel what I'm doing? I'm actually being like a benevolent father or mother, wrapping myself in loving awareness, saying, I have every right to feel the feelings I've got feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a very conscious self compassion and validation.
Yes.
And allowing yourself to actually go there and feel that, opposed to staying up here in the calcified story.
Because if I can bring validation to myself, if I can wrap myself in that tenderness and say, yes, look how fiercely hurt I feel. If I can do that, something in me starts to shift. I start to feel a little more present, a little more open, bringing love to my pain, because they can't bring love to my pain at the moment. They're too busy being defensive against my accusations. And I'm too busy making them wrong for not being able to bring love to me, right? So I've got my loving awareness. That's within my control. I'm going to bring love to my experience. And as I do that over time, I set myself up to be more able to bring love also to their experience. Because it turns out my loving awareness is not a finite resource. I've got endless amounts. I can pour it into me, pour it into you, pour it into your friends, pour it into Palestinians, pour it into Israelis, pour it into Holocaust survivors, pour it into stolen generation. Like there's no limit to my loving awareness. I'll start with me and I'll soothe myself. And when I feel a bit more soothed, I might just feel like bringing loving awareness to you as well. Has to start there, because if I can't, I'm just going to be demanding it from you, and that's going to escalate the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And that can feel, to start with, that can feel a little bit counterintuitive. People are like, why is it my business to bring loving awareness to myself? And I'm like, because you've only got your loving awareness to spend. You can't spend someone else's awareness. You can want it, you can encourage it, you can create the conditions for them to bring love to you, but you don't get to spend it. You've got yours. So either don't, or absolutely smash yourself with loving awareness and then see if you might do the same for them. And you'll notice as you as an individual have practiced that, you can open someone. And then you get their openness to you. And then quite likely at some point they're like, wow, that must have been difficult for you. And you're like, ah, there it is. There's the understanding I wanted.
Self-gratification.
I opened them and now they're a little bit more able to get in my world. Yeah. This work is about evoking openness, because normally we evoke their closedness, but we don't even realize that. Like, as soon as I say, how could you not remember the olives? I've immediately evoked closedness in you. You can feel that. If you stand in, you know, if you stand over there, you can feel that. And instead, I'm trying to evoke openness. I appreciate you being on time. Thank you for remembering the wine. And I imagine you don't want any of this upset for me. And I'm like, beyond stressed and feeling incredibly unsupported. You never want that for me, darling. And it's very true for me right now. Yeah. Loving awareness to them and to me. Yeah. Quite the practice, isn't it? Not for the faint-hearted. And the other thing I say to people when they say, I don't want to lead, I'm like, well, don't. Don't.
Then why are you talking to me?
Just don't expect someone else to, because they're also not wanting to, just like you. Same goes. Like, that's fine. Just stop making them wrong for not wanting to, because you also don't want to. We as humans don't want to. Palestine doesn't want to open to Israel. Israel doesn't want to open to Palestine. It's very natural. You have every right to take that avenue. The whole world's doing it. You'll have lots of friends. Just come to me when you're sick of it. Come to me when you're actually heartbroken. When you're tired, when you're alone, when you're like the heart is calcified, and then we'll commence the work. But you don't have to. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's always such a pleasure, Megan.
Thank you. Did you want to tell us about your book, or it's still just being written? Do you have
still being written. It's called How to Fall in Love with Humanity, because that's what happens. When you stand in mastery with this work, you just see that the world is populated by billions and billions of people, all wanting to feel good and all unskillfully acting in a way that creates pain for others. And this unbound compassion will arise the longer you practice. So How to Fall in Love with Humanity. I'm hoping to have the book finished in July, and it will be published probably 9 months or so later than that. Anyway, it's coming. It's coming. It's happening word by word. Yeah.
Incredible. Well, yeah. We'll share all the ways to connect with you, and you can see all of the programs that Fish has. I highly recommend.
Next group coaching program will commence likely in May.
Amazing. And yeah, anything else? Last whispers of wisdom?
But for all the people I'm working with and have worked with who listen to these podcast interviews, I just want to honor the hell out of you for the courage that it takes, because You know, the fact that I get to spend all day, every day, witnessing people turn pain into love in their relationships is like, I just feel like the luckiest man on the planet. And it's extraordinarily courageous. You have every right to just be stuck in conflict and blaming each other, but no, you won't stand for that. And that's so inspiring.
Mm. Well, thank you, as always, for leading the way with that validation.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks again. Are you looking to surround yourself with like-minded women, be them leaders in the corporate sphere or other entrepreneurs that are interested in having a little bit of community, compassion, accountability, inspiration, motivation, wisdom around their own wellness journey? We're all about agency. We're all about less is more. Super fun monthly events, lots of tidbits of inspiration. Most content is shared via audio, so you can grab it and go as you're folding the laundry or commuting. And it's really just nice to have some place to check into when you're feeling like you need to carve a little bit more space for yourself. You need to up your ante slightly on your self-care, and you're just not sure what to focus on. It's a beautiful source of community, and I'm really excited to keep building it with you. So do reach out if you are interested in joining. I will also share the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being here. Hey there, one last thing I wanted to share with you. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you could rate and review it on your favorite podcast platform. It really does help us grow the show, and this being so important to me to get this message out to more women to help them optimize their wellness and ultimately their lives. This is my mission, and I would greatly appreciate it if you could support the podcast by rating and reviewing. Thanks in advance. Have a good one.